At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point. Last week, exactly 1 month after the shooting that killed 17 at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, students across the country walked out of school to protest gun violence in America.
Enough is enough! Enough is enough! Enough is enough!
And those students aren't going away anytime soon. They're headed to Washington for tomorrow's March for Our Lives, a national student-led demonstration calling for real changes to improve school safety and prevent gun violence in the United States. More than 800 similar marches will be happening worldwide. From the Vietnam War protests to Black Lives Matter, young people have always been at the forefront of America's social movements. But how will American lawmakers and the American public respond to this one? This hour on Point, students from across America lace up their marching boots. You can join us on air or online. Will you be marching? Is change coming? Is it the change you want? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. We're going to be hearing from students from around the country who will be participating in marches in D.C. and elsewhere. Joining me first from Washington is Callie Clardy. She's a senior at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, and she's a survivor of the mass shooting that took place there in February. She's in Washington for March for Our Lives this week. Callie, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
I am good. Thank you so much for joining us. And also with us from Andover, Massachusetts, is Charlotte Lowell. She's a senior at Andover High School and a student organizer of Boston's local March for Our Lives rally. Charlotte, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So I want to start with Callie. Explain for our listeners, we've been seeing this movement grow. We've seen that student walkout that was so impactful. What do you want to accomplish with this march? Why is the march important?
The march is important because it gets everyone involved. It gets everyone to be aware of what is happening. I know like most of the March for Our Lives platform is on social media. Not everyone has social media. So this is just a chance so that everyone can understand what our message is and what we're trying to accomplish, which is to ban assault rifles because they're killing machines. And just spreading that message throughout not just America, but the entire world, because there's over 800 marches across the world in every single country and continent.
And Charlotte, what do you hope to accomplish when it comes to protesting gun violence in schools here in the Boston area? We haven't seen those mass shootings that we've seen elsewhere, but there's still gun violence in our schools.
Yeah, that's a great point. Our message in Boston is very localized because there are issues that affect specifically communities of color more than they affect white communities. So in Boston, we are amplifying the narratives of communities of color who are both disproportionately affected by gun violence and often silenced for those acts and actions when they call for reform. So we are emphasizing narratives local to Boston in order to call attention to issues of gun violence.
Now, Callie, you and your classmates mobilized so immediately after this horrific attack at your school. I have to ask you, how are you doing? How are your classmates doing?
Honestly, right now, I think we're starting to feel the healing process happening. But right after the shooting, I know that I was very overwhelmed and shocked for a few weeks, and I couldn't really do much with the movement, with speaking out and stuff, because it was very difficult to do that. But now I feel a lot better. Like, I've definitely healed a lot with being after school, being with my friends and family, and being a part of Shine MSD. Like, that's definitely helped a lot. But I know most of the students are just want to get involved now and make a change because the healing process has begun.
Okay. I want to read a couple of listener comments from Facebook. One says, good on these people. Thank you, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas students, for not taking no for an answer and for welcoming others to your cause. Our Black and Brown brothers and sisters deserve a place at this table, as they have been affected by gun violence and denied redress for years now. Another comment talks about some of the criticism that has come from these protests. It says, these kids are not leaders. They are literally protesting not to gain more civil rights, but to restrict their own and everyone else's constitutional rights. Callie, what do you say to people who criticize the movement, saying everything from its anti-Second Amendment to the fact that accusing some students of just wanting to miss some school?
I just want to reiterate the whole movement's message, and we don't want to take away the Second Amendment. That's something that we don't want to do. We've had that for many years. We respect the right to own a gun and to protect ourselves. Like, that's not what we're saying. We want to ban the AR-15, which is not a gun for protection. It's a gun for killing and for war. And right now we are like having one of those guns at home. Like, we're not a part of a war at home. We're a part of a war in another country. So that's what we're trying to do to try to prevent those things. And I know that the walkout, some people are saying we're trying to get out of school, but it's not a full day walkout. You walk out for 20 minutes as respect for the 17 people who died, and then you go back to class. And those kids who do leave, it's like, there's not many of those. There's a lot of people beside us. And I know that there was one school in Boston that they actually had no school the day of the walkout. And they actually showed up to school to do their own walkout, even though they had no school because it was a snow day.
Wow.
So, like, that just shows that there's people who are not trying to get out of class. Like, people actually want to support this, and there's students who believe in to help change like our gun reform laws and just try to make things safer.
And Charlotte, how many people do you expect to come out tomorrow in Boston? Are there estimates? And will you be joined by others besides students and your parents? Do you expect city leaders, state leaders to join you?
Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, we have over 18,000 people who have responded going to our Facebook event, and over 50,000 who have responded interested. So we're expecting folks to show up in the thousands. And we're really thrilled about the support that we've received. There will be elected officials marching with us. There will be clergy, teachers, parents. Everyone is affected by this movement, and there's reasons for everybody to march with us.
And Callie, do you expect members of Congress or others to join you in your march on Washington?
I do not know for sure, but I know that there are people behind us here in Washington, because I've had many classmates meeting with congressmen and senators all morning today and yesterday. So there are people behind us. And I don't know if you heard, but there are some policymakers wearing the NRA rating right now, which is an F, and that's that's their support, sharing their support for the March for Our Lives movement.
All right. Kristen is calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Kim. How are you doing?
I'm good. You're on with the students.
I just wanted to say that although my ideas don't necessarily align with the students of Stoneman Douglas and the other students protesting, I do believe that certain individuals are being hypocritical when they say that they're trying to take away Second Amendment rights, while these same people are basically trying to silence individuals just because of their age. I mean, young people are our future, and they have every right to, you know, speak their minds, especially in politics, and, of course, obviously, when it comes to defending their safety. Thank you.
All right, Kristen, thank you for that call. Madison is calling from Baltimore. Hi, Madison.
Hello, Kim.
Go ahead.
So I'm a high school senior at Perry Hall High School in Baltimore County, and we were victim to a shooting several years ago. And directly afterwards, there was protests. There was a large upcry against gun violence. And the administration even got involved. Baltimore County got involved. The state got involved. But no changes actually occurred. It was all just talk. And then a year later, no one even talked about it anymore.
Mm.
So my question is, what's being done this time around to ensure that change actually occurs and the nation doesn't just forget and move on like has happened in the past?
Callie, what about that?
Honestly, I think that it's the social media that that has grown over the years that is helping these my classmates create this movement. I personally am not affiliated with the Never Again people, but I am like a student at the school and I support the movement. However, I feel like because we have such a large school, I don't know what your school size is. I honestly can't answer that question because I don't know all the answers. However, I feel like the United States is united at this time because everyone knows about it. Everyone knows about like what happened out of school. So we're trying to get everyone involved, not just kids from Douglas, but like kids from all over the country who have been affected, and trying to get like our message across through them. Okay. I don't know all the answers, honestly. I'm a senior just like you.
All right. All right, Callie. Thank you. Callie Clougherty is a survivor of the mass shooting that took place in February at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. She's in Washington this weekend for the March for Our Lives rally. Callie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And
bye,
Bye-bye. And Charlotte Lowell is a senior in Andover High School. She's an organizer of Boston's March for Our Lives. Charlotte, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're talking about March for Our Lives, tomorrow's national student-organized rally calling for changes to America's gun legislation. You can join the conversation. What does this march say about youth activism in the United States? Have students always been the leaders of social movements in this country? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Sasha Constanza-Chalk, a professor of civic media at MIT and an expert on youth activism and social movements. Sasha, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
And joining us from Nashville, Tennessee, is Abby Braffman. She's a freshman at Vanderbilt University and a graduate of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. She's an organizer for Nashville's local March for Our Lives rally. Abby, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kim. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure, sure. So, Sasha, I want to start with you. There have been protests throughout history, the civil rights movement. Elsewhere, we've seen the massive women's march last year. This time, this movement has really been mobilized by young people. Tell us, how is that different or is it different?
Yeah, well, I think what you said earlier is exactly right, that young people have been
an important part of every social movement in American history. We could talk about the labor movement and, you know, from the Mill Children's March that was Mother Jones was involved in that. That was in 1903, and that led to the end of child labor, to the Birmingham Children's Crusade, which was in 1963. And that was such a key part of bringing the visibility of black struggle in the South to a national audience and attention when you know, O'Connor attacks the children with police dogs, and that gets national visibility. Or we could fast forward to much more recent moments when, say, in 2012, primarily queer, undocumented teenagers led the movement that pushed the Obama administration to implement the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals DACA program that now undocumented youth are continuing to fight to maintain and save in the Trump era. So I think that it's always been a part of social movement history in this country and around the world.
And Abby, tell us about how the horrific attack at the school, your alma mater, has affected you and what spurred you to organize Nashville's March.
Yeah, so what happened at, you know, my old high school, it's something that's unfathomable. And it's something that, you know, as a high schooler and as a student, there's always this thought in the back of your mind, like you see it in the media and you see it on the news and in movies and things of the violence that can occur at school institutions. But of course, you never would ever think that it's going to happen to you. And especially not a place like Parkland where, you know, it's a upper middle class suburban area. The school is the highest rated one in the county. And then when this happened, I mean, it was just so totally unexpected and so out of the blue and out of anything that we ever thought was in the realm of reality. So once this occurred, there was just so much sadness in the community, you know, like to be going to these funerals and the memorials and to see the victims and the families all over the media. It's people that we ran into at the grocery store. You know, it's people that were in some of my classes and on sports teams and were a part of my synagogue.
Mm.
And to have this happen, it's just truly one of the saddest things that can happen to a community. But once it did, you know, we started to realize after a few days that this was a little bit different than ever before. And I think it was different because people were just so outraged and they just were so fired up and just wanting something to do so badly. We're just willing to do anything that it took to make a change or make a difference or make some noise. No one knew what it was, but we all knew it had to be something. So returning home from Parkland to Nashville, where I go to school, you know, I was really inspired by what I had seen in my community and this energy of just like, what do we do now? You know, just this high energy, this momentum. I knew it had to go somewhere. So in solidarity with the teens from Parkland who started the National March for Our Lives movement, I decided to just start one up in Nashville, you know, and see if maybe I could get some friends to walk around the park with me with pitchforks and posters, you know, whatever it took.
Yeah.
And it became overnight, hundreds of people were on the page, and then hundreds turned into thousands, and now thousands and thousands and thousands of people are coming to march in Nashville and all across America and in 800 cities all over the world. And I can't even believe what happened.
Yeah, and we have a lot of callers who want to chime in on this. Elise is calling from Tampa, Florida. Hi, Elise.
Yeah. Hi, Kim. How are you?
I'm good.
So I just have a couple of quick comments. A, I hope that the children are safe, and I think it's brave and very smart what they're doing. I would argue to the adults in the NRA who say that these children are insane and then they're smart, they're not savvy. If they are not smart and savvy enough to create a march for a cause that they believe in, then maybe they are not smart and savvy enough to A, join the military and fight their wars, and B, vote you in, continue to vote you into office. I think another thing that this march has shown a light on is not only that there are children being killed in school, but there have been a large number of black students killed on college and high school campuses
with no national spotlight. Mm-hmm. The only time there's a spotlight shown on those shootings is if it's a black child that commits a shooting that kills a white child or a white person.
And Elise, I want to turn to Sasha on that very topic. I mean, there's a lot of focus on the mass shootings that we've seen, someone going into a school and committing a terrible attack. But for a lot of other students, a lot of students of color, gun violence is an everyday threat to them. How can this kind of protest directly address that issue?
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely crucial. And part of what happens to shift from a moment of mobilization to an ongoing social movement that's able to truly affect both culture shift and policy change is to broaden the networks of people who are involved. And so I think we are seeing some of that happening with this movement, but more needs to be done. It was really wonderful to hear Charlotte from Lowell center black death and black killings with guns as key to the Boston mobilization. You know, most shootings that actually happen are domestic violence or intimate partner violence. 52% of women who are killed with guns are killed by a family member or a partner. So I think we do need to broaden the conversation about what it's going to take to shift from gun violence. And that is happening in this movement. The frame is shifting. We need to center the murders of black youth, of queer and trans, black and Latinx, femmes and women especially. And some of those links are happening, and that's what's going to help grow this from a moment into a movement.
Sean is calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Kim. I teach at a university here in Boston, and I'm very optimistic about the youth and their attitude here. But my question is, and also I protested in for civil rights in the 60s, for Vietnam in the 70s, but my question is this. I recognize what Sasha just said about being sustainable, but I'm interested in Abby, what you think, what are the adults saying to you? What are the criticisms? And then Sasha, what are the challenges, but what needs to be done?
All right, Abby, we'll go to you first.
Yeah, so the biggest criticism I guess I've received from the adults in the community is that when pressed on the actual legislative processes of bill making and law enforcement in America, you know, there's lapses in my education, and I don't necessarily have all the answers, and I'm not totally totally comprehensively knowledgeable on the topic. But I'm also, you know, the first to admit that. And the first thing I say when I walk into a room is, hi, like, you can tell how young I am by looking at me, and I'm here to be educated. And please inform me and educate me on what you know so that I can use it to my benefit. And I think adults have been really receptive to that, you know, aside from being from people who just want to press me on it for the sake of their enjoyment of seeing me not know things, which is kind of sadistic in and of itself. You know, other adults who actually do have the right intentions in them, they just want to see how I am and if I'm, I guess, worthy of their help. You know, when I say that I don't know, and I don't even know how much I don't know, I think people are really receptive to that, and they appreciate my honesty and my humility. So I've tried to be very upfront about the limitations to my experiences and my knowledge.
And Abby, let's turn to Sasha then, who can give us some of that perspective. Marching is great. But what else must be done to be effective, as Sean asked?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think that the students involved in this organizing process are doing exactly what does need to be done. So, for example, during the Boston walkout, even students who had a snow day, many turned up at the Boston Common, went to an organizing training at a church next to the Common, learned about how to talk to media and press, and also learned about how to build capacity in their local groups, and also how to lobby legislators, then marched up to the State House and then did an afternoon lobby day. Students have produced a walkout and keep moving guide in Massachusetts, and I think in many other states. You can find those at youthinfront.org. So there's a lot of student-created organizing resources to help young people shift from just this moment into a more sustained movement.
All right, Steve is calling from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Kim. How are you doing?
I'm good. What's your question for our guests?
Well, yeah, you know, I was listening in on the radio, and I do agree with stricter gun laws. But my question is, if we do take the guns away, the Second Amendment, from everybody, what's going to stop the criminals from doing the same things and still getting hands-on weapons to do things?
Sasha, what do you think about that?
You know, my feeling about that question is that the U.S. is one of the only countries, it's one of the only supposedly advanced democracies that allows people to access these weapons, especially these military-style weapons. And we don't have, you know, the data basically says that we don't have the type of mass homicides and level of shootings in any other country. And part of that is based on the way that access to these weapons is controlled elsewhere. So I think the data says that we should do this.
Abby, what about the voices who are out there that also decry school violence, but don't necessarily agree with the methods the students are using? They complain about, for example, the antagonistic tone that some students have taken toward the president and some others. Talk a little bit about that.
So I think as students, you know, you have to give us a little bit of leeway in understanding that emotions are high. And of course, you know, I'll be the first to admit that there's things that have been said and done that, you know, could have been smarter and could have been more thought out. But at the same time, I think people who are nitpicking the individual reactions of students and the messages that they're sending out, you know, that's not the point. The point is that people are paying attention. They're hearing what we're saying. And movement is being made and momentum is just growing stronger and bigger and bigger. And of course, there are those who have said things that are, you know, slightly disrespectful and maybe didn't exactly represent the message that people are going for. But I think at the end of the day, what people can draw out of this is that children are scared and they're upset and they feel threatened that their lives are going to be taken away from them while they're being educated.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of a world is that? And, you know, for people to be so upset that children are saying rude things on Twitter or whatnot, you know, I think people should be more upset that they've allowed the educational institutions of America to degrade themselves to a point that children have to feel scared for their lives while they go to school.
All right. Margaret is calling from Boston. Margaret, you'll be participating in tomorrow's march in Boston?
Yes. At the outset, Kim, thank you for taking my call. You had asked, will you be participating? And my initial response was, so long as I have a pulse and can walk, I will be there. I commend these fine young men and women and their bravery. They have the backbone to get this underway, and if not them, who? Because our leaders have lacked the political backbone to stand up and do the right thing. Organizations, which we should mention, a.k.a. gun manufacturers and NRA, making money off of the backs of other people's misery is unconscionable. And the truth must be told. I don't believe that these fine young men and women are being antagonistic. They're telling the truth, and adults have not done their duty in keeping children safe.
Well, I want to turn to Sasha on that point, Margaret, particularly the NRA. Obviously, that has been a direct target of these protesters. The NRA has pushed back, saying that we need to arm our teachers. Guns keep people safe. Where do you see that debate going?
I mean, I think that this is part of why it's so important for this movement to grow, to make links especially to the Black Lives Matter movement and to youth of color who've been organizing around gun violence, you know, previously, partly because if you look at what's, you know, if you look at that context, arming teachers is going to lead to an increase in disproportionate murders of Black youth, you know, and Latinx youth and gender nonconforming youth who are already being pushed out of the schools into the school to prison pipeline. So the idea that you would somehow, you know, solve or reduce gun deaths by introducing more guns and putting them in the hands of teachers who we already know are racially biased in structurally, it's really not a solution.
All right, Sasha Constanza Chalk, you're going to stick with us. Abby Braffman is a freshman at Vanderbilt University. She's a graduate of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, and she's an organizer of Nashville's local March for Our Lives March. Abby, thank you so much for joining us now.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're discussing March for Our Lives, tomorrow's student-led demonstration in Washington, with more than 800 similar events happening around the world. Are you marching tomorrow in your home city? What are you demanding from your lawmakers? And the song you're listening to right now is Awake by Salem DeVern, an 18-year-old student at Boston's Berklee School of Music. The song was inspired by the mass shooting at Parkland. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.
Tell us why this could never be the fault of a weapon. But tell it to the ones who lost a son, who lost a daughter in a damn millisecond. Your fingers are green and there's blood on the scene. Do you feel bad? Do you feel bad? Do you feel bad? The candles are lit and we're not gonna quit. Till you feel bad enough to do something. How many is enough? How many gone? How many cuffed? How many incidents of violence? Till you're awake. How many does it take? How many smiles can you break? How many minutes of this silence? Till you're awake. Oh, oh.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're talking about March for Our Lives, tomorrow's student-organized rally demanding real change in American gun legislation. You can join the conversation. Will this march turn the tide of school safety in America? What has to be done to keep this movement going? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest is Sasha Constanza Chalk, a professor of civic media at MIT and an expert on youth activism and social movements. And joining us now from Washington is Andre Broadnax. He's a junior at the Fair School downtown in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and he's in Washington with his classmates for the National March for Our Lives rally. Andre, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kim. How you doing today?
I am great. So, you know, we have this march going, students like you traveling to Washington. The Parkland students themselves are on the cover of this week's Time magazine. This seems to be a moment in history. What message do you want to send while you're there at the nation's capital?
I want to send a message of positive change that this event that we're going on is something that needs to be really, it just needs to be done. This is what's sad about America, is that change doesn't occur until someone's life is lost, you know, and that's sad. And so we're coming to Washington, D.C. to make a difference, because it shouldn't take someone's life to be lost or multiple lives to be lost for things to change, you know, for people who have power and get paid good money to have power, to hear what people have to say and act on it and change, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sasha, social media played such a critical point in this movement, probably is a permanent fixture when it comes to movements for social change, if for many reasons, particularly the quickness that this organized. Talk a little bit about the impact of social media on this and other movements. I'm talking to Sasha. Hold tight. Just 1 minute, Andre.
Well, I want to hear what Andre has to say.
You start.
So social media, of course, is a key component of what's happening. These are young people who've grown up with social media, so they're deeply fluent with how it operates. It's allowed them to very quickly clap back at some of the attacks that have come from the NRA and some of their opponents. It's allowed them to sort of flip the script on some of the terms and talking points that politicians have tended to use, especially those who are, you know, backed by the NRA. So the, you know, our hopes and prayers, you know, are with you. That got flipped around and said that, you know, thoughts and prayers is not enough. We need action. And that became one of the slogans on a sign that was used and will be visible at the march tomorrow. So I think that these are social media savvy students, and that's important. At the same time, we have to look at the combination of social media, print, and broadcast across the broader media ecology, because that's what really is helping to give this movement power and helping to build it up, both what print journalists are doing and what broadcast journalists are doing to cover what's happening.
Chris is calling from Charlottesville, Virginia. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you doing? I'd like to say good on these kids for what they're doing. I hope they stay involved. And all these other kids out there that might be listening, if you turn 18 on or before Election Day, get registered and vote. That's why all these politicians are trying to dismiss everybody as snowflakes.
And Andre, I want to turn to you. First of all, are you, you're a junior. Are you planning to register to vote when you can and have your classmates talked about that?
No, it's not really a concept that we really talked about. I'm not a politics kind of person, so I don't think I really want to register to vote right away at 18. Mostly I just want to focus on joining the Marine Corps and trying to just get out of my, just trying to get out of Minneapolis. That's what I'm trying to do.
Chris, what do you think of that answer?
Well, they're not mutually exclusive. I mean, as long as you're not registered and don't show up on Election Day, the NRA and the politicians really don't care what you say. If you get out and vote, they'll listen. That's what they listen to.
Sasha, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with Chris. And, you know, it's interesting. Actually, today a video came out of service people standing in support of the gun control legislation that's being proposed, or various attempts to increase gun control. And so I encourage you to check that out. It's circulating pretty widely on social media, and it's service members, including from the Marine Corps, talking about why they think it's important to not have these assault weapons in civilian hands.
A comment from our website from a listener. These kids are a godsend, articulate and determined. They have already generated some tremendous political power. Anyone claiming that they are being used for special interests or directed by nefarious organizers haven't been listening. Their voices are as genuine as things can get these days, and I wholeheartedly support them. Sasha, we have seen in the beginning of this movement, there some of these students were accused of being paid actors, being manipulated by people and they didn't really understand. Is that something we've seen throughout history in other movements, or is this something new?
I mean, powerful actors will always try and discredit their opponents, and that's certainly happening now. The aspect of it that's slightly new is the way that there's a sophisticated social media disinformation machinery that's been very well funded and set up. And we're having that conversation right now in terms of the Cambridge Analytica revelations around voter manipulation. And we're seeing botnets that are backed by, they haven't been traced yet, but presumably some of them are being funded by opponents of gun control legislation.
Andre, if there's one point that you really hope gets across tomorrow while you're in Washington, what is it?
Oh, one point that I'd have to make. I want to say that to be honest, that this is a hot topic, and I feel like for the point I want to make tomorrow is that I believe that everyone should have the right to protect themselves. And I believe people have the right to bear arms, but we need to make sensible gun laws. And we need to make sure that it, not just any old body can get a gun, you know, because there's people like me who want to own a gun because I want to protect my family and what I hold dear to me and love and my property. But I don't want, you know, people who are just plotting to do acts of harm to other people, you know, that's not, you know, it makes me frustrated, very frustrated, because I do believe people should have the right to protect themselves. But, you know, because of this hot topic, you know, things are going to change, definitely.
All right.
People are just irresponsible, you know?
Yeah. Andre Broadnax, a junior at the Fair School downtown in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's in Washington with his classmates this weekend for the National March for Our Lives rally. Andre, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes. Thank you so much.
And now I want to bring in Marissa Lang. She's a Metro reporter for The Washington Post, and she's on the ground in Washington covering the March for Our Lives this weekend. Marissa, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
So what are we seeing so far on the ground? Give us the mood there in Washington.
Well, the city is just getting ready right now. Already we're seeing some street closures, so there's a lot of logistical things happening out here. Traffic is adjusting, as you would expect, with the march that's going to bring potentially 500,000 people to the city. And people here, I think, are getting pretty fired up. There's a lot of high schoolers that I've been speaking to over the last few weeks who are preparing to participate, who are organizing their own rallying points and meeting points to go in with their friends and teachers. There's local families who have opened up their homes to visiting students from out of town. I spoke to a group of seniors at a retirement community who are holding their own protests. So I think this city is really galvanizing behind this march.
All right. Chris is calling from Waterbury, Vermont. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me on. I guess my biggest question is, if this movement is calling for a banning of the AR, the assault rifle, the biggest concern, playing devil's advocate, I have is the Virginia Tech massacre that killed almost twice as many students, and I believe they used handguns. If they ban, hypothetically down the road, if they were able to ban assault rifles and another massacre happens with handguns, where does the buck stop? You know, because it's going to infringe. That's why I believe it is infringing on a Second Amendment right. I believe these kids have a great message, and I believe that they are creating a great movement. But my biggest concern is, if it does ban ARs, where does the buck stop?
Thanks for that call, Chris. Sasha, what about that argument, people fear a slippery slope?
Well, you know, as a professor at MIT, my response to any student who used that argument in one of my classes would be that a slippery slope argument is a logical fallacy. So just because there's a slippery slope doesn't mean that you can't decide the point at which you don't want to go past. So if you do believe that handguns should be accessible, fine. You can still believe that and believe that AR should be banned.
Emily is calling from Novi, Michigan. Hi, Emily.
Hi, guys.
Go ahead, Emily, you're on.
All right. So my question is, our President Trump kind of seems to be listening a little bit more to the money as opposed to the people. So my question is, how is this movement going to sidestep that?
Yeah, Marissa, you've been covering the March for Our Lives. How has this resonated with the president? What do you expect him to say about this? And what will how will the NRA respond?
Sure. It's hard to say how it's resonated with the president. And my focus has primarily been on the activists on the ground. But I can tell you that last week, when the students in D.C. and the surrounding area walked out of their high schools and marched from the White House to Capitol Hill, they were met by quite a few politicians from the Capitol who came out, senators and representatives who met with them, spoke to them, and encouraged them to keep doing what they're doing.
And Dick's Sporting Goods, they've seen sales sink after imposing a new gun policy barring the sales of some kinds of weapons in their stores and affiliates. Sasha, talk about people voting with their pocketbooks. It goes both ways, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that's been very interesting to see is how, in addition to the walkouts and the marches, we've seen a successful boycott of NRA, you know, programs linked to rental car companies, travel packages, that type of thing. And so very, very quickly, a number of major firms have been convinced by consumers contacting them to de-link themselves from the NRA.
Kennedy is calling from Rapid City, South Dakota. Kennedy, welcome.
Hi, I wanted to say that change is inevitable, and the design of American politics gives a lot of room for that. And I'd like to encourage the youth to be smarter in the future, because there's a lot of legislation that has been passed but has a lot of hindrances to make it effective. For example, the registry for weapons in America cannot be computerized, so it's all on paper, and it makes officials' jobs more difficult. The loophole for gun shows being able to sell without background checks should be fixed. There's just a lot of things that hinder current legislation to promote safety, and they have an opportunity to change that.
Kennedy, thank you for that call. Alicia is calling from Jacksonville, North Carolina. Hi, Alicia.
Hi, Kim. So Jacksonville is a large military community, so weapons are readily available, even if it's not a military-grade weapon. Our community is usually very comfortable with weapons. So my question would be, are we looking at other options, not just gun restriction, but also being able to better assess mental health and mental wellness? Are we looking at how we train young people and students to deal with a weapon or to deal with those certain situations? Because I'm not sure we're going to avoid bad people doing bad things.
Marissa, talk a little bit about that. Are there other options being discussed in this movement besides just banning guns and going up against the NRA?
Well, to be clear, I don't think that any of the organizers or any of the students I've spoken to in the last few weeks want to ban all guns. I think that their position is they want to ban certain types of weapons, certainly assault rifles, different things like bump stocks, which can be used to turn a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon. And I have heard quite a few people talk about mental health services and wanting to step up public health options for people, resources in schools. There is a multifaceted conversation happening here, and I think that it's not about one or the other, but I think these kids want to see us to say we're going to do all of these things.
And Sasha, I want to turn to you. After the march is over, what comes next? What makes social movements last and result in lasting change?
Yeah, I think when movements grow and when they broaden their base and when they connect on the one hand to elite supporters, which we've already seen in this case, everyone from, you know, Hollywood celebrities to politicians supporting the movement. But also I really think it's going to be crucial to broaden out the focus just from the particular, you know, ban the AR-15 and the bump stocks to other both legislative and social service-based approaches to reducing gun violence. And those will be most effective if they're centered on those who are most disproportionately affected by gun violence. So again, we're talking about, you know, most people who are killed by guns in this country are women and femmes who are killed by a family member or an intimate partner. We have proposals even going back to 2012 from the Dream Defenders in Florida after Trayvon Martin's death to repeal the Stand Your Ground laws. And after that failed, there was a 74% increase in the use of guns to kill people and lack of prosecution in Florida. So there's a lot of different approaches. Ultimately, if the movement can grow and link to other organized groups that defend people who are most disproportionately targeted by gun violence, that's how we can win lasting change.
Sasha Costanza-Chalk is a professor of civic media at MIT and an expert on youth activism and social movements. Sasha, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kim.
And Marissa Lang is a Metro reporter for The Washington Post. She's covering the March for Our Lives rally in Washington this weekend. Marissa, we really appreciate your time.
I appreciate yours, Kim. Thank you.
And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.